Support for GLT's Grow comes from Chris Holderly at Advantage Lawn and Landscape, offering customized services for commercial and residential landscaping and property design, including staging for long-term growth during all seasons. Proud to serve Central Illinois. Details at growingadvantage.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
There's the food we eat and the food we waste. The National Resources Defense Council estimates up to 40% of all food produced in the United States goes to waste, even though 1 in 8 Americans struggles to put enough food on the table. I'm Mike McCurdy. This is GLT's Grow, your source for practical gardening advice from our expert, Patrick Murphy, from Illinois State University School of Biological Sciences and curator of the Fell Arboretum. Hey, Murph, how are you today?
Great, Mike. Nice to see you.
So some row crops, maybe you could call it future food, is wasted because it's never harvested. What are row crops and what's going on? How come we're not pulling that food out of the field?
Row crops are anything from corn and beans. Rice is a row crop. Peanuts is a row crop. Are row crops. And when it comes to row crops, they are the category of food that the waste is the greatest. And it can be from various factors, from no access to the market due to environmental limitations, wildfires, you know, so that's going to affect the price of wine and grape products because we're having wildfires out west.
Can they not get into harvest, or is it actually burning the vineyards?
Well, it doesn't get to where it needs to go for various reasons, including governance reasons. So we've seen examples of this happen in Venezuela. It's about to happen in South Africa. And it's the unintended consequence of governance policies that sometimes takes food away from the market. And the food is either improperly handled or stored as a result to all of these factors. They all contribute to the food shortage.
Any of these row crops ever left in the field due to prices? It's just not worth going in to harvest it because the price has dropped for some reason.
You know, I'm sure that it has in time, but I think that that is something that has happened in the past, and it doesn't happen in countries where there's developed agriculture. You would probably still want to harvest that crop to minimize your loss, and proper storage facilities are available if you wanted to hold on to that, invest in it, crop storage, and sell it when the market correction is made. A great part of the world eats food that doesn't come from organized agriculture, and they're oftentimes very susceptible. So parts of Africa and in the rainforest areas of South America, there are lots of people that their sustenance is based on what has been left behind. So that could be anything from old banana groves or remnants of slash and burn
farms. Oh, so you're talking about foraging for food.
Literally foraging, okay. Yeah. Having to travel great distances to acquire the food. And that food is oftentimes abandoned because it was already abandoned, right? There was a slash and burn farm and it grew for a while and then the soil became unproductive and they move on and do that in another spot, but there are oftentimes remnants of that activity that actually contribute to primitive people's diets.
You mentioned or touched on this. What about improperly handling or storing grain or food?
Yeah, so an example of that is when there are bounties of grain and overages for various reasons. Good crop conditions can lead to overages in crops. And say, for example, they're stored out on the ground. In that location, there are new techniques and technologies that are utilized to protect that ground-stored grain, for example, but it still can be compromised by rain, rodents. If we had some bad weather that prevented that food from going from ground storage into, say, an elevator or a dryer, there could be a big loss there. And war is another big impact in areas of our world where crops are abandoned in the field just because it's unsafe to go there.
So a specific question, maybe just for me, I'm concerned about storing my garden-grown potatoes. I grew a bunch of potatoes this year. What should I do? And I assume whatever I do with the potatoes, my own potatoes, would apply to store-bought potatoes. I can't imagine the plastic bag from the store is the best way to store them.
It's not really. And the best way to store your potatoes is in low light and cool temperatures. And if you can, you can lay them out on like racks so they're dried or containerize them in wooden boxes or even in paper bags on shelves. The floor is not really a good idea because that could be a basement floor or a garage floor, and the temperature there fluctuates a little bit, so you get a little bit of conductivity that you don't want there. but
airflow is important.
Airflow is important, but it should be low light so you don't the eyes don't take off mm-hmm. and become, you know, air roots, if you will, and make that potato look ugly. And I think that all it's interesting all the things that we're talking about that lead to hunger also led to the people discovering that there's a lot of the vegetable that we eat that's edible. So people have had so much bounty in our lives that we've overlooked that a lot of the vegetable that we throw away is actually edible.
Exactly.
Potato's a perfect example.
Yeah, why peel the potato, right?
Yeah.
Do we know if people who grow their own food are less likely to waste it or let it go bad?
I'm going to only speculate, Mike, only because I'm not armed with the research in front of me. But I look at it this way. The doer decides. So if you have a bounty one year, your Concord grapes are, you know, going crazy, and you have more than you can handle to process yourself, oftentimes those grapes are shared or traded or bartered or something like that. And I think that those people would be less likely to waste food, but I could be wrong, right? Because there could be the family that planted six tomato plants in their small plot, and they probably could have done away with one, with, you know, they could have gotten away with having one or two tomato plants because there are so many tomatoes from six tomato plants. Some are going in the garbage, some are rotting on the ground. So there's probably cases where the home farmer, if you will, the home produce maker is wasting it, and they're... You can see examples of it even in community gardens where people put a lot of work into getting it started, but some of the late tomatoes, they just end up on the ground instead of in our bellies.
Sure. So that sort of, you mentioned, you used the word processing. That's what I'm doing, is I'm processing that food. The nice thing
Excellent.
About the potatoes, I can store them. I don't have to do anything with them right away.
That's right.
The tomatoes, the peppers, you got to do something with them. So we canned salsa this past week. A lot of it, and that was a great way. We got rid of poblanos, serranos, peppers, and then a ton of tomatoes went into that, my own garlic, and we preserved it.
That's excellent, Mike. It's definitely salsa season, you know, because a lot of that stuff is really kicking right now, and salsa is a smart way to save it in a jar. And if you can make the salsa with the tomatoes that you've already cut the crowns off of and freeze the rest of it, you can use it later. It's just as good as canning, except for it requires ongoing electricity to keep the freezer running.
Sure. I interviewed a University of Arizona professor years ago who called himself a garbologist, and he'd go into landfills and do research, and he could nearly identify from which affluent zip codes the garbage was from based on the length of the asparagus trimmings. In other words, rich ate only the best, most tender parts and trimmed off more. Are we being too severe in how we clean, trim, or prepare our food?
I think my personal opinion is yes. And even in my little household, my wife and I see this differently. I like the whole stalk on the asparagus, like the example you use, but I know that it gets kind of fibrous at the bottom. So you give it a couple of passes with the potato peeler and you still eat the whole stalk because the fibrous, chewy stuff is on the outside. What's inside of that on the asparagus stem is just as lovely as the seed head, as far as texture and taste and, you know, that funny smell.
Sure, sure. Most people only use the garlic clove. There's more of this plant that's edible as well. What about other parts of the garlic plant?
Well, it's the entire plant except for the little spur at the bottom where the roots used to come out. And, you know, there's somebody that's probably eaten that, right? We're going to get that question from somebody saying, I've been eating those for years, and I'm 7 feet, 5 inches tall, and I recommend that everybody start eating them.
But the garlic scape is delicious.
Yeah, and I think that is something that goes hand in hand probably with the garbologist thing, right? So you get folks that eat the part of the carrot that's in the ground and they throw the leafy part away, but that part is edible too.
If you have any questions about food waste or getting all we can from a plant or about anything in your garden, submit them at wglt.org/grow. Next week, we'll talk about protecting and preserving trees. Any tree, historic trees, rare trees, Murph?
They're all important. They all have their list of appreciations, and we can prioritize them when we talk about it.
That's Patrick Murphy. I'm Mike McCurdy. Send your gardening questions to wglt.org/grow.